Wake up, sleepyheads. This is CJSF 90.1 FM.
And you're tuning into Slumber Party.
This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. We broadcast on the stolen ancestral territory of the Kwikwetlem, Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh.
Listen online at cjsf.ca or on our radio app, which you can download from the app or Google Store depending on your device. Keep up to date on our social media at linktree.com/CJSF radio and learn more by visiting our website cjsf.ca. Welcome, everybody, to Slumber Party. We are here every Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m. I'm DJ Star.
And I'm DJ Coco. We are so glad to be here for another great Tuesday night. As usual, we have some music lined up and a topic for later on, which we'll get into. But as usual, we will start right into the music. We're starting off with my music first, because I'm very excited to play this one artist. I'm going to do two songs back to back from her, and just want to preface that I just found her, so I'm not really entirely sure of all their other songs or other albums, but I will get into it soon. But these two songs are awesome, and I've been listening to them on repeat for the past couple of days. So this first one is called Montan by Tay Shi, who's the artist. And the second one will be Don't Cry by the same artist, Tay Shi. And these are both from her newest album, Make Believe, I Make Believe. She is a Colombian-Canadian singer / producer. And she is also about to come to the Biltmore Cabaret on November 18th in Vancouver. So if you like this song, you can go buy some tickets and check her out. So enjoy.
Used to be the type I chased. Might have had a pretty face, but didn't want to do the things I did. Now I'm with a gentleman. He's the type to break you in. And there's no use trying. Thought about it with the lights on. Oh, no. El amor reggaeton. Since we got to talking, I guess we don't keep up that well. You finally found yourself a new disappointment that you couldn't wait to talk about. One day you're sitting on top, then you're crossing your heart and you hope to die. You get it over to pieces, you rinse and repeat. We'll be right back.
The Simon Fraser Public Interest Research Group, aka SFPERG, has been leading social and environmental activism on campus for 40 years. SFPERG is student activism, by students, for students. Do you have a vision for a brighter future? Are you passionate about changing the world? Visit us at www.sfperg.ca. That's www.sfperg.ca to learn more about getting involved today.
Atención.
Yucastereo. Domingos 6 a 8 p.m. 90.1 CJSF Radio.
CJSF
90.1 FM.
Radio Mano Papachango
90.1 FM. Yucastereo.
Atención.
Welcome back. This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, community radio from Simon Fraser University. You're tuning into Slumber Party every Tuesday from 6 to 7. That last song you just heard was called Girls by King Princess from her new album Girl Violence, released September 12th this year, so just a couple days ago. And then just before that, I already introduced, but we heard two back-to-back songs from Taishi, Don't Cry and Montan from her new album, Make Believe, I Make Believe. And as foreshadowed before, we are going to discuss our topic for today, which was picked by DJ Star. So you can lead us off.
Yes. Okay. So there is a lot of talk about this on social media this week, and especially last week, which is when it happened, about the protest in Nepal. And it really caught my eye, as like most news articles do that are related to Gen Z in some way, or any kind of like youth organization or uprising. So there were these protests in Nepal against their fairly corrupt government, among many other issues, and it was led by Gen Z for the most part, between 13 to 28, I think, was like the majority of the protesters and people who were organizing against this government. And it began on September 8th in the capital of Nepal, Kathmandu. And yeah, there was tens of thousands of young Nepalis who were protesting on the streets against the government. And there's been like a long history of corruption with this specific prime minister who's in power right now, who has been accused of bribery. And for example, he took money to disguise Nepalese job seekers as Bhutanese refugees in the U.S. And then obviously, like, they were caught and, you know, accused of fraud by the American people who were like checking those things. And yeah, so he was like taking money from people in Nepal who were so desperate to get jobs that they needed to migrate to the U.S. because that's another issue that we can get into later, is that there's a super high unemployment rate as well. So yeah, there was a lot of people protesting.
Mm-hmm. And more about it as well. So it's very publicized right now because of this protest, since there's at least 22 people dead and hundreds more injured. And of course, this was more of like quote-unquote Gen Z protest, so a lot of these people dead are young people. And more of why this kind of death and injuries happen is because of the events that were a result of the protest, which were that the protesters defied police curfew. So some of the things that happened were setting fire to the Supreme Court, Parliament, and other government buildings, and the Prime Minister's home. So initially, the police and the military, they were hitting the protesters with water cannons, rubber bullets, tear gas. And then at the point when the protesters broke the parliament fence and they started vandalizing, the police switched to live ammunition and just started going after people. Mm-hmm. And so this is all a developing story right now, since it was September 8th. So this is still very recent. Just recently, the Prime Minister, Sharmi Ali, the one that's not known in a very favorable manner, he resigned, and he was forced to resign in a letter. And right now, there's not really an organized spokesperson for all the protesters and all the Gen Z people. And so there's a lot of confusion right now on how to address all this confusion in Nepal right now, which is, as I said, all ongoing and developing.
Mm-hmm. And just to clear up a bit more of the timeline, is September 8th is when people started doing peaceful protests against the government, and then it got out of hand. And then that's when, 21 civilians were killed. And then after that, even the government banned over 24 social media apps because of the protests, and they did not want their citizens to organize with each other or even be in contact with the rest of the world. And then after these 21 civilians were killed and the social media bans happened, the next day is when everyone was setting fire to the Supreme Court, the parliament, and then all the other government buildings in retaliation, because in a lot of news articles they were saying like that is when the rage was just like fully escalated, because, you know, there's people who were even killed in their like school uniforms and stuff, and that is just like, you know, pretty unacceptable.
Mm-hmm. And you're probably thinking like, what is this protest even about and why now? So we can kind of give a summary of what led up to this event and specifically why for Gen Z. What I found particularly was, I'd say, 3 points. DJ Star can add on after, but this all kind of began because of the Gen Z population, the Nepali Gen Z. It was all led on social media, and there's a lot of frustration and anger currently against rich Nepalian kids from political families that are known to flaunt their money. So there's this hashtag going around called hashtag Nepo Kids, of these very rich Nepalian kids that are showing off their luxurious trips or their Louis Vuitton bags, when at this time period, Nepal is still a developing country, and a lot of Nepalis are struggling to make ends meet right now. And so seeing kids their same age flaunting all this money that comes from politics and basically their taxes is making them really angry. And that's only kind of just the fire that started. There's also other factors involved. But some of the examples of these Nepalian kids that they kind of are the main front of what's being targeted is the daughter of the former health minister, for example, Shrinkala Kadiwada, who was Miss Nepal in 2018, showing lots of privilege on social media, showing all these pictures of going to Europe on Instagram, etc. And another one is Smita Dahal, so another granddaughter of a former prime minister, and flaunting designer bags. And so this was kind of, you know, where kids, Nepali kids, were sharing their anger and frustration with each other by targeting these Nepo kids on things, platforms like TikTok, Instagram, etc. And then after this kind of growing frustration, everyone was kind of combining their frustration together, the government, Nepali government, decided for a social media ban at this point. And people felt that, or I guess the reason why for the social media ban first was because they said themselves that it disrupted social harmony, and they tried to attempt to censor their voices for all this collective frustration over people who have privilege and flaunting it and obviously showing inequalities in the way that they live. And so with this social media ban, everyone is even more upset now, because now it's infringing on the freedom of speech and kind of keeping status quo. And as well, it affected online businesses of Gen Z and other people. And the final kind of factor, as alluded from the social media ban, is that the government has this very authoritative grip on Nepal. And Gen Z, the protesters state that it's a protest not against just the social media ban and these Nepo kids, but against systemic corruption. So that's more about what this protest is for, is all these factors were all tiny little things like Nepo kids, social media, but it's all for this same goal or this common goal of systemic corruption that is happening in Nepal. And this very deep rooted resentment of Nepal's political elite and how little economic opportunities that regular Nepali people have. One factor that, or one stat that I've saw multiple times when I was researching was that the youth unemployment rate in Nepal is 20.8%, as from the World Bank 2024, which is very high. So as you can see, all these kids, they can't find jobs. All these Gen Z, they can't find jobs. Their families are struggling to make ends meet. And then you obviously go online, you see kids your same age just throwing out handbags and plane trips. And obviously it wasn't something that they worked for. But that's what I found on my end.
Yeah, like we see this in Nepal and we see this all over the world too, just like the widening gap between privilege and poverty. And yeah, most people in Nepal are not experiencing the same life of luxury and privilege that people in power are experiencing. And hundreds of thousands of Nepali youth are actually forced to migrate to find other jobs outside of Nepal because there's just such a shortage. But even when they do migrate, they are still considered the cheapest workers in some of the Gulf states in the U.S., like Texas, Louisiana, etc. So they are either going to be exploited in a different country or struggling to even put enough food on the table in their own country. So the options, you know, they've been pretty much pushed to like do this protest because there's both options are pretty horrible. Mm-hmm. And can't really live just being exploited or not having anything. Like, which one's better, like being exploited or just not having a job, you know? And people are going to have to choose and like be forced to choose that.
Exactly. So this protest is just one kind of putting the foot down and saying like we can't keep dealing with this and we can't keep dealing with this bad hand, and especially with the government having decades of political instability. They've had lots of changeovers and confusion, and it's never really been solid at any point in Nepal. So the fact that the current prime minister, or I guess the one that was during this protest, resigned, and now there's more uncertainty. I mean, it is a step forward for fighting against corruption and for, I guess, nepotism as well. And just trying to navigate through this world, which, I mean, in many other countries, as Ijisar said, we all struggle with these same problems. But in Nepal, it is especially apparent. And it kind of makes you wonder if more things will happen like this in other parts of the world.
Yeah, because I remember last summer there was a very similar situation in Bangladesh, I think, with people uprising against their corrupt governments, and essentially against capitalism in a sense too, with like such poor conditions for the working class people and the government not actually trying to work towards finding a solution in their best interest. It's mostly just the government cares about keeping the government rich. And even though technically Nepal at the time when people were protesting was a communist country, but it wasn't necessarily true communism in the sense that they were still keeping a bunch of cash and offshore accounts. And like I said before, like there had been recorded instances of cabinet members accepting bribes and also the prime minister accepting bribes and doing these things that are so corrupt. And like also exploiting his own citizens by making them pay to disguise them as refugees to like go to a different country. Like, that is not true communism. And so that's something interesting to note as well, that they are technically communist, but they're operating within this environment of global capitalism. So they're still following the interests of the elite and of the rich. And you can see that because, you know, the unemployment rate is 20%, and so many people are like suffering to find a job. And in communism, like, that shouldn't be as much of an issue. So just like, interesting to note that a lot of the underlying thread of all of these youth uprisings and protests and revolutions is that, you know, there is an intrinsic issue with capitalism and how it's working these days, where more and more people are being exploited and just pushed to the brink of trying to survive.
Exactly. And I think this protest was especially apparent in news as well, because of specifically Gen Z protesting against this, because I'm not sure how common youth uprisings are nowadays, or in the past even. You'd usually see maybe working class adults, etc., but having actual kids band together and say, hey, this is a problem we see, is very impressive in my opinion. I mean, I have a lot of respect for the kids who went out and protest against these ideas that are kind of abstract in a way, but you know, they are fighting what they believe in and to make a better country. So, good
and
for them.
Also, just one last thing to add about the timeline and how they actually decided who the next leader was going to be is that they chose the next leader, who is a former Supreme Court Chief Justice, and her name is Sushila Karki. And they chose her through a virtual poll on Discord.
It's very Gen Z.
It's very Gen Z. And they had a subroom in that Discord called fact checks on their discussion pages. So, you know, like, they were trying their best to have like an objective democratic election. But interesting that it's on Discord. Not sure. I feel like there could be some issues with that potentially, but. It's still a really cool example of how youth can claim power in the government in some way and stand up for what they believe in.
In a much more modern way.
In a much more modern
way. I don't think in history we ever had a poll on Discord to elect someone, but I mean, time changing. That is interesting. I'm not sure what this, do you know any statistics on if youth revolutions are more common nowadays versus before? Do you think
I don't know. I think a lot of revolutions are normally led by the working class or by university students as well, because they are getting that education on certain economic systems and just like gaining some abilities to like, or at least not ability, but maybe like theory to apply to like their world and see, maybe like, I can see how this structure is negatively impacting me and my family and my loved ones versus just, you know, living in this state and maybe accepting the status quo more. Like, I feel like the older you get, the more you tend to accept what is there. But
yeah,
that's just a theory anyways.
That does make sense, because with all the genocide in Gaza protests, we've had a couple at SFU as well, which are students and student led. And I don't see as many. I do see adults protesting too, but yeah, it normally starts at the university level.
Yeah,
once
you're
exposed.
Could consider more like quote-unquote like radical movements, even though it's more just movements for human rights, but like that does kind of stem from youth more often. And it is nice to see it happening and like having some real impacts in the world instead of just people talking about it. And like, we can actually see in Bangladesh, I think there was also mentions in Kenya this year, Sri Lanka, like similar uprisings.
The Philippines too, I heard.
So like, this is, yeah, basically when I saw this news, I thought it was really inspiring. And I kind of was thinking like, could Canada ever, you know, do something similar? Like, could any of these more Western countries, like, who think of themselves as very free and like, what are the other words that we would use to describe ourselves? But, like, very free. Canada would describe itself as, like, more socialist and more welcoming, more diverse.
Mm-hmm. I thought about it. I thought about that question a little bit. Mm-hmm. I do think, no, not on the same scale as Nepal. I think particularly because I want to say that Canada is very culturally diverse. And not that that's bad. I think that's a great thing. But maybe that we're too culturally diverse to unify together in a way. Because I feel like in Nepal, the Gen Z, they were all living in kind of similar situations and backgrounds in the very close area. So they can collect together. But in Canada, since we're such a massive place and we have lots of different people all over the place, it's really hard to collectively meet somewhere and do something about it. So if we did have a revolution, I think it would be a much more specific, unique population. Like, for example, I don't know, maybe the kids in Manitoba who are big into logging and oil, and suddenly all their everything's being replaced by green energy. I feel like maybe they particularly would have a revolution, but I don't think on a massive scale, in my opinion.
I see what you're saying, but also at the same time with having like a culturally diverse population, I see how that could give people like a perception of division within everyone, but like there are a lot of common experiences that I think unite a lot of the Canadian population at this point, especially like, because Canada is also capitalist or operating on capitalist ideologies. So like I think in Vancouver and Toronto, like the homelessness situation is really bad, but like it's definitely different than Nepal. Like each country has its own material factors that are different, because like we have such a big homelessness population, and these are the people who are probably the most affected by like different forms of oppression that are mostly just related to capitalism. But then, you know, they don't even have a lot of resources to like sustain themselves, so let alone thinking about like organizing a revolution. And then who does that leave to organize a revolution? Like I feel like a lot of people in Canada are somewhat comfortable or experiencing some amount of privilege where they don't feel the need, or I think it's either they don't feel the need to like change anything about Canada, or people are so overworked and overstressed that there feels like there's almost no time. So in Nepal, it seemed like they were pretty much like pushed to the edge, where like their citizens were being killed for peaceful protests. And I'm not sure how it would play out in Canada, but I wish like, you know, people would be able to organize a bit more. And I have been seeing on campus, like there is this group called Socialist Alternative Youth, and I think they're a newer group. And I think there's other political groups that like people are out there organizing and it's happening, but it's still, I feel like a lot of people are very nationalistic in Canada as well and very proud of Canada, even though there aren't necessarily a lot of things to be proud of that Canada is doing. Like, I feel like Canada is corrupt in its own way, and it also is corrupt in other countries. Like, it is exploiting people in other countries versus, it's hard to describe. Like, we're exploiting people in other countries, but we're also exploiting immigrants who come to this country. So, like, I feel like the populations that are most affected by Canada and how it showcases its version of capitalism are the people who are, you know, the most preoccupied with just the stresses of life and like needing to deal with those first and foremost.
Yeah, I'd say, yeah, the general Canadian citizen does not really care too much about changing their situation. I mean, there are people in low income, disability leave or other things that they have their personal problems, but I don't think that it's enough to have a full revolution, because people are like, oh, hey, I have free healthcare. Like, yeah. You know, we got some...
We're better than the U.S.
Ecosystem. Yeah, better than the U.S. You know, and typically, I think most of the world thinks that Canada is one of the best countries to live in as well, even though as a world, we all deal with corruption and all these things that, you know, we can't be perfect, but, I mean, we got to work on them. Mm-hmm. And Canada is just... It is up there, but I do agree, especially with I see international students. I think there's so many issues with international students having being worked to the bone here, mm-hmm. Just to pay for their school, which is 4 or 5 times the tuition, which is also going up again this year and next year.
Yeah,
way more than domestic. And I don't feel like that is fair. But is that enough to have a revolution? I don't know. Do others feel strongly enough about that? I don't know.
Because there is this whole, at least I have this personal stereotype of Canadians not, and especially like Canadian youth not being that political. Like, I think there are a lot more, like in Nepal, for example, like I think people are really invested in their politics and like the fact that the youth even organized like different candidates to vote for, to like elect in, to like replace the old candidate. Like there's,
they seem more in tune with fixing mm-hmm. their country.
And there's a lot of, at least that I sense from people here, is like there's a lot of complacency and just like, yeah, you're voting and like people vote, but it's, you know, they're not really active like politically outside of that. And I think that's really important to be doing.
I know a lot of students who don't vote.
Yeah, not everyone votes.
Not everyone votes. There's still a big population that doesn't vote. But I don't want to generalize that because we don't know the specific percentages of how much people vote here versus Nepal or other places. Mm-hmm. But there will always be a population who just don't care mm-hmm. outside their lives, which nothing against them as a person, but it's just something that it doesn't strike their mind to help others get into a better situation. You know, I mean, it's not the best idea or principle to go by, but there are always people who are like that. And so I don't know about the revolution in Canada.
Yeah.
I mean, it can also be for a silly thing as well. You know, when we were having that social media potentially being banned in, I think it was the U.S., I'm not sure if Canada was also involved with that, but if there was a social media ban in Canada, I think Gen Z would go mad. And so, yeah. You know, there'd be like silly revolutions, but I'm not sure about an actual serious one that is like, you know, we need to go against nepotism specifically or like that.
I think it is possible. Okay, I'm just going to put my answer out there. Like, I do think it is possible. People just need to get organized and to learn more about how capitalism really does affect us all in some ways, and pretty much all negative ways, except for, you know, the top 1% of people. And if there is an alternative, like I feel like people feel like they don't have enough power as individuals, and that's why there is the need to organize and to get more and more people involved. So yeah, you guys should check out the Socialist Alternative Youth and other organized. There's also like Anak Bayan. They're pretty cool too. I think they're working with imperialism in the Philippines and also in Canada.
I feel like this also brings up the question that, do you think that kids are these days are too scared to speak up more now than before? Because now with social media, I can't even tell myself if it makes me feel more aware of how others are feeling and wanting to speak up, or makes me feel like I'm shrinking and I'm too small of a voice.
I think it's difficult because we're so politically divided. I think that's why, like, if anyone says anything about one side or the other, like, people from the opposite side are going to be, like, flooding the comments and, mm-hmm. you know, basically just pummeling them down. But, like, the division is just an illusion, guys. Like, we're all part of the same, like,
we're all human
system, you know? And, like, we're all human. But I also just wanted to note that, like, Canada thinks of itself as so, like, such a good country. And I feel like I have this issue with a lot of older Canadians, or even, like, anyone that I've interacted with is like, oh, we think we're, like, such a good country. And then we, like, look down on other countries that, like, don't have, like, social programs like us, or, like, who aren't super diverse, even though there's so much racism and, like, institutional oppression in Canada. But we see these countries like Nepal and, like, Bangladesh who are actually, like, standing up for themselves and for, like, the other people that they also, like, their fellow citizens. And I just want to say that, like, referring to them as, like, a developing country. I'm not trying to like call you out or anything, mm-hmm. but it's also just like they are in certain situations because of like colonialism and imperialism, and like we continue to profit off of that and then call ourselves like, oh, like we're a fully developed country. And I know like that is not what you intended with it, and that's not what most people intend with it. Like that's just common language that we're taught to use in Canada, and like, you know, is pretty well accepted. But it's also like, I'm not sure if you know, it's like the best distinction to make between us, because Canada is just like, we're not doing the best things to people in these countries either. Yeah, it's hard to,
because I used to say third world country, which is even worse. So I moved on to develop, but I didn't really want to say poor country.
Yeah, like I'm not sure exactly the best way. I normally say like Western or like Global South, but if you guys know a better way to look at it, let us know, and I'll also look into it. But just a note to like think about too.
Yeah, just say lower income country, I'd say, like, for now. It's
less wealthy.
It's definitely a different kind of world. That we should we should definitely take STEM ideas from and see what we can do about change here.
And also, they have a 20, I thought it's so interesting, because they have a 20% youth unemployment rate, but then in Canada, in BC, I think it was 2024, we had a 17.9% unemployment rate for youth, and that's like pretty much 18%.
Yeah,
and that's
actually now
almost like pretty much like it rose 10% since 2022, so we're like also kind of getting to a very high youth unemployment rate, which I thought was like pretty interesting, because that's very similar to Nepal's youth unemployment rate, which was like a big reason people also revolted. So there are like similarities between Canada and Nepal.
That is true. That is very true. Yeah, recently all my mom and I have been talking about is the youth unemployment rate, or just unemployment rate in general, because kids these days, university kids, there's so many articles out there right now because no one can find a job. And all the full-time jobs are now part-time jobs. Part-time is casual. And I don't think... Do you think there'd be an implication for a revolution, though, in BC? I don't think we have the capacity to do that.
Not sure yet. I mean, there's always a possibility, but it just depends, like, how much people reach crisis in their own lives and see it in other people's lives. Like, what is the solution? Because obviously things just seem to be getting worse and worse at this point. Like, there doesn't seem to be much hope. Also, one other thing is that there is like also kind of nepotism in Canadian politics too. Like, just think about Justin Trudeau. Like, it's not like full nepotism in that way, but you know, like we have similar figures in our political systems like reappearing, and
something to food ponder. For thought.
Yeah, food for thought.
Food for thought. But yeah, that's kind of our, that is our discussion on, the protest by Gen Z in Nepal. Also some questions that we thought, and we'll keep pondering for the next while.
About, and you should too.
That you should too, about revolutions and the way that our countries are structured. But that's all we have for tonight for that. We are going to continue on to the music for the last 50 minutes of our hour. So I think it is still up to me. So this next one is, I believe, an artist from Kosovo, which is a country in Eastern Europe, which I've never heard of. I had to look up on a map because I didn't know where this was.
Me neither.
I thought it was a place in Russia. It is not a place in Russia.
God forbid.
Yeah. But this song is in Albanian, but the artist is based in Toronto. So what you're about to listen to is called Perkon, by the artist Sahadi. Enjoy.
Эти букеричка ямка далебе, а Renaissance Coffee is open at SFU. Prime Minder and his team have been serving the SFU community with great coffee for more than 20 years. If you're looking for a wholesome meal, delectable desserts, or something to warm yourself and lift your spirits, Renaissance Cafe is the place to be. Featuring fair trade espresso beverages and brewed coffee, Renaissance Coffee is open Monday to Friday from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Well, how do you get up and go?
With Canada's health system under strain, going digital can help heal our healthcare. From virtual visits for everyday concerns, to faster, more accurate diagnostics powered by AI, technology is transforming care. Digital Health Canada supports the people and innovations behind this change. Learn more at digitalhealthcanada.com and subscribe to our podcast.
Welcome back. This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby Community Campus Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. I caught DJ Star off guard.
Yeah, just had to throw on these headphones. having a zone out moment.
The last song you just heard was called Running From Yourself by the artist Rez. Awesome song, actually. should have started off with the song because it went more with the vibe of the episode.
Yeah, we were looking at like pictures from the protest where like the parliament was burning and then listening to this dark techno. We were like,
oh yeah. So that song was from the album As the Pendulum Swings. Rez is known as the queen of dark techno, and also dabbles in industrial music, and she is a multiple Juno Award winner. And she just recently got married to her girlfriend, so congratulations, Rez.
Congratulations. And the song that you heard before was Desire Machine by Spirit Blue, one of my personal favorites.
And we are signing off for the night since we only have a couple minutes before our show ends. So thank you so much for sticking around and tuning in. We really appreciate it. We will be back next Tuesday, 6 to 7, with a new topic. And next up will be an open mic slot. So if you'd like to try out radio, then come by to the station and go to the training studio and start your own open mic right beside us.
And also, CJSF has a few Welcome Week events coming up next week. I think they're on Wednesday and Thursday, 5 to 8 p.m. next week. So if you want to come down to the station, say hi, meet and greet with fellow CJSFers.
Please do.
You should do that.
We would love to meet you, whoever you the listener who's listening.
Whoever you are. Come on in. There will be pizza and you will be welcomed for sure.
Okay. Anyways, thank you once again. We are going to sign off, but we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. See you guys next week, Tuesdays at 6 p.m.